We're down to 15 as we record this. We're down to 15, and but we
you know
need
what that means? You know what that means?
100% hockey MVP.
A hockey hero. That's all. It's a 100% hockey hero, okay? That's
you
all
have
it
your
is.
Way. But that's what we're going to do. For every series, we're okay. going to name the best player of that set. We've got Carolina right, so getting by New Jersey.
Carolina wins in five, in overtime in game five, actually in double overtime. Who's your 100% hockey hero for the Carolina Hurricanes?
The fans of Carolina. I am.
Oh, that's
I, no, no, I know. I know.
That
I know.
Is
I'm
so lame.
No,
that
I'm not
is
going.
So lame.
I'm not going to go there with the actual award, but I want to acknowledge because they went through the ringer. The organization went through the ringer. I talked about this a little while ago. How people were disrespectful to the Carolina Hurricanes after the trade deadline, and I'm so happy that they got to experience a playoff series. Victory.
Lame.
That stands out to me.
Lame.
And you
that
cannot
so
take
lame.
That. No, but
my God.
Players, I'm gonna get to the players, but I wanted to offer up a shout out. Why is that so difficult to do? Why being nice
you're one of those guys, you're
is not
those
soft.
Guys, you're one of those guys that something big happens and you name the same guy the three stars. You know? Well, you know, that should have only happened once in the history of the game, and period, that's it.
No. No. Yep. Because sometimes
it's, you remember it's, when it happened? Do you remember the original one?
Richard, right?
Yeah, Maurice Richard got 5 goals in the game, and he was the 3 stars, number 1, number 2, and number 3.
It's not bad if you do it because everybody's waiting for that guy anyway. Some nights. So yeah. Just give
you,
them all
I tell you, you are just, you're just pandering to Hurricane fans.
I am.
You know, so stop it.
Seth Jarvis
yeah.
is my 100% hockey hero of that yeah. first round.
Mine is Sebastian Aho.
Run runner.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think that there has been a huge issue, and I have been adamant and consistent about it for years. That they have needed that number one guy, that goal scorer, which is why they went out and got Mikko Rantanen for that short period of time. And to say, you know, I'm gonna score the big goal at the key time. I think Jarvis is fantastic, but to score the winner and play the way Aho did in this series in the 5 games, he deserves a ton of credit. So he's my 100% hockey hero for the Carolina Hurricanes.
The ups and downs of the Stanley Cup playoffs, say, hitting Canada head on between what Winnipeg and Toronto are going through and then Ottawa and Edmonton on the other side. We'll dive into that in a little bit, but Logan Couture has just logged on. Captain of the San Jose Sharks, who just recently announced that he will not play in the National Hockey League anymore, yeah. is coming
and
on.
And I, it's funny, I think, and I truly believe this, because Logan plays on the West Coast, and in San Jose, which means a lot of hockey fans watch their games start at 10:30 Eastern time, not 10 o'clock even, but 10:30 Eastern time. That's the way they do it in San Jose. I don't think people appreciate him enough and appreciate what he did. And therefore, I don't think they appreciate his retirement and, more importantly, why he retired. So I think it's important to sit and take some time and talk to Logan. And knowing Logan, maybe he's got some thoughts on what's going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs, too.
He's a thoughtful guy. I've known him forever.
You have?
From the time that he was drafted into Major Junior.
Wow.
And that was the year of the lockout, and the Memorial Cup was in London. Corey Perry and Sidney Crosby. That's how long I've been...
Wow, you are old.
Logan Couture.
You are old.
Yeah, and his dad's a pretty good player, too. There was. Good stay-at-home defenseman, Logan Couture.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's not Brandon, but it's pretty good. Logan Couture, we'll get to him. And next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I've always fantasized about this, but never had to experience it yet. So what's been the first couple of days of retirement like, Logan?
Kind of the same as it was for the last 6 months, really. I think we knew in January or even December that I was probably done playing, but different just because it sits out there in the public and everyone knows now. So I've got two young kids, so still pretty busy.
What was the toughest conversation, Logan? Was it with your with the coach, with Mike Greer, or your wife?
I think they're all difficult. Talking to my parents as well. You know, it was a weird spot to be in. People were asking, but at the same time, I think a lot of people were scared to ask. At least my friends and family that are not around here, but. My wife knew because she saw me every day and we talked about it. But yeah, I mean, the Sharks have been so supportive. It's still difficult when it comes to the time that I had to make the decision ultimately. And but I'm glad that they were very supportive.
Can you explain maybe a little more detail for people who aren't as familiar with the injury you had and how you decided to retire?
Sure. Yeah. I originally got hurt in, I believe it was early July of 2023, off-season training. I was running a treadmill at our facility here in San Jose on incline, just sprints that I normally did, you know, for the last 15 years and, felt something strange. So went and got an MRI and, it didn't really look too bad. So just took a week or so off and then continued to train the rest of the summer and skate and ramp up for the season. And, once I started to really push it on the ice, I felt weird. My groins were sore. My hips were sore. So I went and got another MRI in early September, and that's when it showed osteitis pubis. And I remember going in and meeting with the doctors and our trainer and really having no idea what the injury was. I had never heard of it before. They gave me a quick overview. You know, they said, it's an injury that it's tough to predict how long it's going to be. You know, you could feel better in a week. You could feel better in 4 months. Or there's a possibility that it doesn't get better. So I started to research it, looked into, you know, which athletes commonly had this injury, found out it's a lot of hockey players, a lot of soccer players, a lot of Aussie rule football players. And, you know, looked at some guys that were able to recover, some guys that weren't, unfortunately, some guys that ended their careers young. And did some research with some other hockey players that have had it, reached out to a few guys around the NHL, guys that are still playing, guys that aren't anymore. And kind of got a feel for what I was in for. You know, we attacked it many different ways with physiotherapy, with cortisone shots, with different types of, I guess, other types of therapy as well. I traveled around the States to see doctors. The Sharks brought doctors in here. Finally found a doctor in San Francisco last year. I thought we had figured something out and I was going to move past it. I got back skating, I got back playing, but after the first couple of games, it just wasn't right. It was an extreme pain. I played 6 games last year. We had the bye week. I remember the last game in Anaheim, I could barely, you know, walk before the game, but I figured that I would try and get through it and then have the break, with my family. We're going to go down to Mexico. And after the game, I felt terrible. I told the coaches, I said, I don't know how this is going to react because I can barely get up the steps of the bus. And got into Mexico a couple days into that trip. I couldn't get out of bed. My wife had to help me out of bed and turn the trip into a tough time. And then that was it for the season, unfortunately. And this summer, I went back home to Canada and I felt okay. I thought I was going to rehab and train. And I felt okay until July, they flew me out to New York to meet a specialist out there, and he did another MRI, another assessment, and he said, "No, you can't skate. You gotta do some different stuff and try something different." So we tried another program all the way up until about December of this year, and you know, I'd feel good for a day, and then it'd be extremely sore, and kind of felt like we were going backwards again. And from what I've been told with this injury, the more that you re-aggravate it, the harder the chance is that you're going to get back to play, especially at my age. You know, I just turned 36 and I've been through a lot of hockey games over the years, a lot of playoff games, a lot of hard times on my body. And I wasn't going to get back to a place where I could play, a place where, you know, I could play multiple games in a week. You know, maybe I could skate once every 10 days and take a while off. And that's just not realistic to be a player in the NHL.
And so, like, how do you feel today?
I feel okay. You know, I'm not hockey specific training anymore. I'm more so training to try and stay in shape. As most hockey players find out once you finish playing that, it's easy to put weight on. So I'm trying to stay in shape in that regard. I'm trying to be healthy enough that I can spend time with my kids. You know, my daughter's about to turn 6 months and I have a 22-month-old son. So they're about to get it really active. I'm good enough to walk them around the block for a while in their strollers. I can play golf the odd time. You know, I take, you know, maybe once every 2 weeks because I'm just so sore after that. But yeah, I think if I stop, you know, specific hockey training, that I'll be back to normal. At least I hope somewhat normal in the next couple of years and can live my life normally.
So you are limited still.
Yeah, still limited. You know, anything as simple as walking uphill still aggravates it for an extended period of time. You know, I ride the bike. I got a Peloton behind me that I ride. And, you know, if I go pretty hard, I'm sore the rest of the day. I mean, sore is about a 3 or 4 on the scale of you know, where I was. I was a 10 when I was playing hockey. I couldn't walk. I couldn't go upstairs. So manageable, but it still bothers me.
How does it present differently than a groin injury?
Well, it's in between the two pelvic bones. And there's a possibility, although it doesn't show on an x-ray, that it is that shifted. So the bones are off. Okay. So really anytime that you step or, you know, in hockey sense, you take a stride, it's pulling the wrong way. So it's pulling on different muscles. And, you know, it's groin pain. It's deep, achy bone feeling pain, which is at the front of where the original injury is. And then it's all the way down below as well with like deep, deep bone ache. And then the muscle pain is just simple groin and like lower stomach pain from time to time.
So could the interpretation at time that it was a sports hernia?
That's what I originally thought it was. Yes. I thought when I was running on the treadmill that I had a hernia because that's where I originally felt the pain. But they quickly found out that it wasn't that. Like I said, I had no idea what osteitis pubis was until it was explained to me. And I did my own research online as well.
That's the most dangerous thing, by the way, as you grow older, doing your own research.
You know, I stayed up late a lot of nights looking at that. So.
Yeah. Does it all go back to that first tweak? Or was there something there before?
No one really knows. You know, it's been explained as it could be an acute injury over an injury that has accumulated over the time of just so many strides and so much, I guess, stress on the groin area. The skating stride is not a natural position for the body to be into. And eventually it just breaks down, I guess.
It does. You know, I've been around the game a long time, Logan, and have lots of friends, guys who played as long as you have. And they at times later in life, not when they're 36, but when they're 50, they say, I'm not sure it was worth it. Does it ever enter your mind?
Not right now. Definitely not right now. We'll see down the road, but I don't think so. I mean, hockey is my love. You know, it's all I ever wanted to do when I was a young kid. I dreamt of playing in the NHL. And I got to play a long time. I got to play with some really good teams. So some of the best memories of my lifetime came playing here in San Jose for the Sharks. And, you know, when I sit around outside in the beautiful California sun, I think of some of those memories.
You don't have to rub that part in, man.
Some of those playoff runs that we had, and those are some of the fondest memories of my life.
You having fun watching Tommy Hertl play?
I am. I'm glad that he's got that fire back. You know, that's something that Tommy wears his emotion on his sleeve, and losing was definitely hard. It's hard on everyone, but it's hard on him. He can't hide it. And I was thrilled for him last year when he got the opportunity to go to Vegas. And I felt for him in the playoffs because he wasn't himself and he was coming back from that injury. But he's having a great series for them right now. And the Vegas fans are seeing the type of player that he is.
So you have enough love of the game to continue to watch and enjoy when other teams play?
Yeah. For a while, it was tough. I think when you're injured and you're away from the game a little bit, at least I lost the love for it. You feel like it's, you're not part of the team and all that, but I moved past that now. I think the last, just announcing it has turned things around. I've watched almost every single playoff game that's been on TV. I watched all of them last night. So I love hockey and I love watching it.
Well, before we get your analysis then, because we're going to use that because sure. You know more about the game than Darren and I do. Explain the relief of going public and the press conference and what it meant to you and your family that you didn't have to finally hide it.
Yeah, it was a big weight. Certain people knew that I had reached out to my parents, obviously, and people that I wanted to know. But the constant questions and, even going out with my kids, there's a lot of Sharks fans here that would, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And it's tough. It's tough to lie to people and really not tell them the truth. So I was glad the Sharks did that. I didn't want anything big. I told them, like, just do it and get it over with and we'll move on. But they insisted and I'm thankful that they did because my two kids are there. My wife was there and that's a day that I'll always remember.
You do understand your role for this franchise and they did have to do it, right?
Yeah. Looking back on it. Yes. At the time I was just, I just wanted to get it over with, to be honest with you. The week before it happened every day, I was very anxious and I don't like speaking in front of big groups of people. So that was part of it as well.
Were you angry? Were you sour? Were you depressed during this whole thing? What were your range of emotions?
I definitely wasn't angry, not or sour. I think, sad, upset that I wasn't able to play, felt like I was missing out, even though our team was struggling, felt that I could have helped our group. When you're not playing and you're you wear a letter on the team, you try and do, or at least I try to do as much as I possibly could. I'd hang around the rink and wait for guys to finish practice or talk to them before practice. And especially our team, we have so many young players, just be there as a sounding board for them, talk to our coaches and management. But at the same time, it's almost like my words were hollow to a degree because I wasn't with the guys. I didn't see it on the bench. I wasn't there during the games. It's just a weird spot to be in, something that I really wasn't comfortable with at the end of the day, looking back at it. But now that everyone knows, I feel, I still go into the facility. Obviously, well, right now they're doing a big upgrade at Sharks Ice, so I won't be in there for a while. But I'll still go in and be around the guys, and I feel a lot better when I go in now.
Can you see yourself with a life in hockey?
I'd imagine so at some point. I think that's something that we'll talk about here when the dust settles a little bit. We've got the two young kids that are keeping us busy and all that right now. But I'm sure that once the winter comes around and the sun goes away and the days get a little bit longer, that I'll be missing it.
And speaking of young kids, although they're not 22 months and 6 months, but when you look at Eklund and Smith and Celebrini, that must give you a little bit of hope for the team that you played so well for.
Absolutely. I think following the Sharks this year, there was a lot of growth in a lot of players. Obviously, they still finished at the bottom of the standings, so there's a lot of work to be done, but the pieces are there. I think they've got to continue to add. I think this summer is a massive summer for the Sharks. I know they're going to try and bring in some players. They have so much cap space. And the one thing with these rebuilds is you can't rush them, but you got to do them properly and you got to bring in players and fill the holes that are needed to be filled because there needs to be improvement out of this team. I think the team's at the bottom the last few years and it's time to start going in the right direction.
Are you a hockey nerd? Are you one of those hockey nerds that follows it all? And like when you're talking about cap space and
to a degree, to a degree. Now, I don't know all the details, but I can see what the teams spend, and I know how much. I was the PA rep, so I know how much they're going to need to spend.
Did Patty or Jumbo or Pavelski give you any advice on the transition that you're about to experience or are in the middle of?
A lot of guys, Dan Boyle.
What have they said?
Pavs moved back to Wisco, and he's helping out with that team there a little bit. He just said, you know, try and stay busy. And Jumbo and Patty are around the rink with the Sharks quite often, so they're staying busy. Boyle's different. He hasn't really done anything into hockey. He's trying to get me out to join his golf course so I can play with him a few times a week. So just stay busy. That's all I said, you know, stay busy, find something that you love, and you're going to need to stay competitive because that's just your nature. Find something that drives you. And, you know, whether that's golf or whether that's getting back into hockey, because that's the one thing that you miss big time.
Do you have any other hobbies that drive you?
Yeah, I mean, I golf. I'm not the greatest golfer. I'm not terrible. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle there where I can play pretty good. But
single digits.
Yeah.
So, of course he is. Corey, come on, he's a hockey player. Why did you even ask that? Why?
A lot of them are good. I'm not Pavelski level, but I'm okay. I'll definitely be playing some golf with some of the guys because there's still a lot of local guys here, and I have good relationships with the guys that were former Sharks. So I'll be doing that soon.
Let's take a break and we'll turn the page and talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. It's 100% hockey with Millard and Shannon, joined by Logan Couture. You talked about watching the games. What series has jumped out at you?
Well, I think right now the Leafs Sens. Obviously, there's a lot going on in that series. I never played in Canada. I played in Ottawa in my junior. Mm-hmm. So I know how passionate the people are there. I'm excited to see the building in Ottawa. I know a lot of Leafs fans travel and can only imagine what's going on in some of the heads of those Leafs players right now. You know, a little bit of doubt seems like it might be creeping in. So that's one that I can't wait to watch game six.
So yeah, you've been, you just said something there that tweaked me. We all think that hockey players are hyper-focused, competitive edge, and the only people that, you know, have the doubt are the fans. Does it creep in for a player too?
I think right now for that team, for those guys that have been there, that have had some tough runs over the years. I think with them though, they've learned how to deal with the media and all that. It's just the self-doubt. I think that's the one thing that might be creeping into their game. Especially if Ottawa scores the first goal next game. It'll be interesting.
How does that present itself during a game for the Toronto Maple Leafs and hold them back?
I think you're just, we went through it here in San Jose. We were up 3-0 when we lost to the Kings, and you know, there's a couple of those games that we probably should have won. But you just give up a goal and then you start to look around and, you know, it's almost like you're waiting for someone else to step up. And if no one else does, then that's when you find yourself down 2-3-4-0 in a game. And you're thinking about the next one and, you know, they're going home for game seven. So, but you can't bank on that.
I might be honest. You've kind of caught me off guard. Cause I never thought the athletes had the same doubts that the fans did.
Yeah, I mean, it's natural, especially if you've gone through it before with that team. Right. You know, I think that team is, they got a lot of scars. And I know they beat the Lightning, was it last year or the year prior?
Yeah.
They had a little bit of success. But I think until you go on a longer run and you really have that confidence, you know, this would be a big win. If they win this, if they beat the Sens in game six and they kind of, you know, that doubt will go away and they'll have a lot more confidence, you know, the next series.
What about the Oilers and the Kings?
LA didn't look very, very good last night. I think they've cost themselves the series. They cost themselves game three, game four. They could have swept that series, and the Oilers have woken up. You know, still waiting for Connor really to take over a game. They played great last night. He didn't have to take that one over and win it for him, but it's coming. So I think the Kings are in big trouble.
Well, the game that he took over was an ugly goal late in the game, the first game of the series.
Right, and LA was able to.
Edmonton fans could argue that they should have won in five games now.
I don't know. I feel like last night was an obvious Edmonton win. They dominated from puck drop. I don't know what the stats were of that, but I don't think LA had the puck for very much of that game. But yeah, I think LA's in tough going forward here.
You weren't part of the group that I'm going to reference, but in game four, LA played five players basically under 7 minutes in an overtime game. And they went with three lines and 4D. And you're in the middle of it. Are you trying to keep those guys pumped up, or are those guys bitching, complaining, which I would be doing? Like, that's a lot of guys.
Or are you looking over your shoulder at the coach saying, what are you doing? Play some more guys.
I think when it comes to the playoffs, you're just, if you're one of those guys that isn't playing, you know your job. I mean, you're trying to help guys out. I know guys that I played with, you know, you come, they're handing you water, they're handing you Gatorade, they're asking if you need anything. That's just, most hockey players are that way. They're supportive of their team. But I don't know if that's a recipe for success. If you can't trust those guys to play a few minutes in overtime, then, I mean, should you really be dressing them? That's just my opinion. But some of their defensemen played a lot of minutes, and some of them aren't too young. I think you saw it in the last game. That's probably why LA didn't play very well. Those guys are tired. When you're tired like that night out, when you're playing a lot of minutes, you can kind of get through it on adrenaline. But the next game is when it really affects you.
That's the old classic thing of you get involved in a long overtime. And the residual effect of the long overtime, right? It really does add that much more to your energy level in the next game?
Absolutely, yeah. The next game, I think by now, obviously the last game didn't go to overtime, so those guys should have a couple more days to recover. But you play that many minutes, your legs just don't feel the same as the next game.
One more from last night for you. It was in the Golden Knights and Wild game. Minnesota looks like they're going to win, scoring with under 2 minutes to go. And it's not called back because of a kicking motion, but rather an offside play with nobody in the rink even realized was going to be a factor because everybody's watching Hartman. Was that tough for Minnesota to turn the page on? Or take us inside that rise of emotion, because Hartman's doing the swagger down the ice and all soaking it up, and then it's taken off the board.
It's tough. I mean, I was watching that, and they showed the first replay on my channel here. I'm not sure if it's the same in Canada, but I saw that Nyquist was offside. He looked so close. And I know Hill was saying, like, he kicked it, but it didn't look like it. You know, it looked like it went off his pants. I'm not sure if it went off his shin pad or his pants. And so I figured that was going to stand. But the offside is what I saw. At least I caught right away. And then I was curious if that – because I don't exactly know the rule. Does that come from the NHL to review that offside, or is that an actual?
No, it was a minute 15 to play, so that has to be called by Bruce Cassidy, the coach.
Okay, so and under 2 minutes is goalie interference. 1 minute.
Goalie interference. Anything under a minute is done by the league.
Okay.
In that situation, but anything prior to that has to be called by the one of the coaches.
Yeah, so that would have been tough on Minnesota, although I think they showed Hines on the bench, and he was melting, trying to hide it like this, and he was saying offside. So I think the coaching staff from Minnesota knew, and I knew the coaching staff in Vegas knew. So for Vegas, they were probably pretty calm on the bench after that. They got the word it was offside, because it comes pretty quickly. I mean, your video coaches are clipping that as soon as the entry happens, and they're telling whoever's got the mic in their ear, offside, offside.
Right.
So everyone on that bench knew, and probably most people on the Wild bench knew pretty soon after. It's tough, but you have a full overtime or intermission to get over it. You got one shot to win a game, and for Minnesota, that's to go back home and close out a series. So I'm sure they're disappointed. They had a lot going on in that game with Gustafson being sick and Fleury having to go in and all that. Just a breakdown, I think, by their fourth line and in overtime, and two defensemen chasing a guy behind the net and leaving a guy that can score some goals held and with a great opportunity in front.
Is there more pressure playing in the National Hockey League or being a video coach in the National Hockey League?
Ooh, it's tough. I've sat in with all the games that I've missed the last couple of years. I've sat in with our guys. We have two of them, and they both have different jobs, but they're clipping and they're clicking their fingers so fast. They're doing clips for the coaches, they're doing entries, they're doing goalie interference, they're doing penalties, possible penalties. It's crazy in there. They got 12 TVs all over the place, so they're very good at their job.
I'm curious, when you're on the ice and you cross the blue line and you know eventually the puck will go in, do you know that you're offside and they hope they don't catch it?
There's always close entries. I've had a couple where I was convinced I was offside, but I wasn't. Especially now with the rules, I think your foot can be off the ice instead of when I was playing. I believe you had to stay on the ice at all times.
Way back then, Logan, years ago.
3 years ago, yeah. But yeah, you have a slight idea. On that one, I'm sure Nyquist had no idea because he probably thought he was onside, and it really wasn't, you know, egregious. It was pretty close, and he's probably kicking himself right now because he could have had his left leg hanging back a little bit to stay onside. So that one's tough.
The funniest one I saw was earlier this year in Vegas, where I work, and Vegas scores and they come together for the celebration and they're talking, going, it's not going to count. I was offside. The player says I was offside. And then they had to push each other through the line at the bench for the high fives to actually go through just in case it wasn't called back. But they were like, yeah, that's not going to stand.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I mean, as a player, if you're a foot or two offside, it's pretty clear that you entered before the puck did.
Can we go back to talk about you and your career before we finish? Because just from a Sharks fan perspective, does the run to the final against Pittsburgh, is that the thing that jumps out at you? Or is there something else that jumps out at you that says, man, oh man, this was a great ride?
That was the most fun team I think I'd played on, for sure. That was the most enjoyable team with the most enjoyable coaching staff. And everyone on that team really, really enjoyed being around each other. And it was a weird year because I got hurt early. We kind of struggled. And then after Christmas, we turned it on and we were one of the better teams in hockey. But we still had to go into L.A. and win the first round. We were fortunate that Nashville beat Anaheim because I believe Anaheim won our division that year. So we had home ice against Nashville. And then we had, right. St. Louis had home ice against us. And then Pittsburgh had home ice against us. But yeah, that was so much fun. We had such a good team, such a deep team. I think when I look back on teams that I think I played on that could have won it, I think the best team that I played on was the team that lost to Vancouver in 2011. I thought we were the better team for three of those games. We lost in five. That was when BX scored off the stanchion in double overtime.
Right.
But our team was just so deep. We had Joe Pavelski was our third line center. Jumbo, Patty, Setoguchi, me, Danny Heatley, Ryan Clough, just deep, three really good. Kyle Wellwood was really good for us that year. And Anthony Emmy hadn't lost in the playoffs. He hadn't lost a playoff series until that loss against Vancouver because he beat us with Chicago the year prior to win the Stanley Cup. And that team I thought was the best team. Vancouver was obviously very, very, very good, and so was Boston. But that's the team that I thought should have won it all.
Who was the funniest teammate not named Joe Thornton that you played with? Character.
I played with some really good guys. Jason Mares is really funny. He's on television. And that's just the perfect job for him. Alex Stalock, I lived with him in the minors, so we've known each other for a long time. He's actually on Sharks Radio, and perfect job for him. Really, really funny. Kept the room light. Those are two. James Shepard, two, three guys that really stick out when I think of just having a good time, making the guys laugh. And fortunately for me, there's three guys that I still keep in contact with to this day because they're just great people.
And really, to Darren's point a little bit, just exactly what Thornton and Marlowe mean to the franchise.
The two of the best. I mean, with Patty, everyone always asked me about, you know, those two players and what I thought. And until I played on that 2016 World Cup team and got to practice with Sidney Crosby, Patty Marlowe was by far the best player that did everything well that I'd ever been on the ice with. And that takes nothing against Jumbo. Patty's just a lot better of a skater than Jumbo was, and speed-wise and all that. Jumbo obviously was elite at many, many things, but Patty could do everything. He could skate, he could shoot. He was smart, played hard, even though, you know, he took some heat in the playoffs. You look at his playoff stats, they're pretty remarkable. But and Jumbo was the best passer, one of the best passers to ever play the game of hockey. And they both were different personalities. I got to sit beside Patty in the locker room almost my entire career. The whole time that he was here in San Jose, I sat beside him, and, you know, thankfully our equipment staff would put me beside him on the road too. So Patty and I spent a lot of time sitting beside each other, and he's not the loudest guy. He doesn't, he doesn't have a ton of conversations, but he spoke a lot to me and he taught me a lot. And, you know, he'd always ask me how I was doing. And then Jumbo's obviously a loud person that that's the alpha in any room that he walks into. And you always have a good time with Jumbo, and always kept it light, always kept it fun. You know, after losses, you're disappointed, you know, 5-10 minutes goes by on the bus, and then it's time to move past it and have a good time and start enjoying it again. And that's one thing with Jumbo is, you know, it's the best league in the world. You got to enjoy it from time to time. And we went a lot of hockey games together, so we had a blast.
That dude lives life the way I want to live life. Awesome. I would like to carry myself. Like,
awesome. I'll get an odd FaceTime from him. He's shirtless, rollerblading around near his house in Los Gatos and just checking in to see what's going on. So, yeah, he's one of a kind.
Yeah, this is supposed to be about you, not about him. But were you aware of all of his charitable work in the community that we finally learned about around his retirement and around the retirement ceremony?
The one story that that I did know about that was really, really cool was during the 2016 World Cup when him and Gord Downie were hanging out almost every night. And that was what I did know about that. And I know Jumbo won. No one to know about that, but I saw there was an article that was written about it recently or a few years ago. And, you know, he lived with Patrick, who is Gord's brother for a while. I don't know if they still see each other often, but yeah, I know Jumbo cares a lot about a lot of people, and he's such a special person.
Not to be too sentimental about it, but this would, what do you want to be remembered as?
I said it in my speech, and I'll say it again. I just want to be remembered as a hard-working player that would do really anything to win hockey games. Someone that elevated their play when the games mattered more in the playoffs. I think that was when I played my best hockey. Didn't matter if you needed me to score. I try to block a shot, kill a penalty, really anything. I cherish that I was one of the guys that the coaches would put me out, you know, when we were down a goal, if we were up a goal. So, yeah, I think obviously I never won a Stanley Cup. We never won one out here with San Jose, but I hope the fans out here just remember some of the great runs that we went on and some of the great memories. We played in some pretty special games that I'll never forget.
And you played in best on best. How were your emotions during that Four Nations?
Yeah, amazing. It was the World Cup back then, but
similar
type of tournament. That tournament was amazing. It was in Toronto. I had so many friends and family that got to come to those games. The emotion playing for your country. I never, you know, I played under 18 and under 17, and I'd never made the world junior team. Obviously didn't make the Olympic team. So that was the only time that I ever played in one of those tournaments. And special that we won that, and just a cool experience to meet all those guys. A lot of guys that I looked up to really spend a few weeks with them and get to know them was special.
Speaking of special people, one of my favorite people in the game is Brian Kilray.
Yeah.
There's got to, and we didn't rehearse any of this, so you've got to have a pretty good Brian Kilray story for us. And it can be off color, it can be anything you want.
Way too many. I'll tell a couple of them that are really, really quick. I said one during my speech, but one memory I'll never get out of my head is after a win, Killer and his buddies, he had tanks, yeah, a ton of them. And they had this room right across from where our dressing room was. And his buddies, I don't even know if they watched the game, but they'd be in there drinking beers the entire night and smoking cigars. And we could smell it. The cigar smoke would like leak into the locker room. Anyways, I had to go in there and talk to Killer 5 minutes after the game ended. I walk in there, I knock on the door, and one of his buddies answers. And I was like, hey, can you grab Killer for me? So Killer walks out. He's got a Molson Export in each hand and a cigar in his mouth with a big smile on his face. Just. Because we won the game. But that's something I'll never get out of my mind. I remember after games, some guys, this is back when guys were starting to ride the bike post game. It wasn't really big, but they'd have a few bikes set up for us. And first time Killer saw it, he walks by and he looks at one of our guys and goes, what are you doing? He's like, I'm riding, coach. Like, we have a game tomorrow. And he goes, when I played, Bobby Orr didn't ride a bike. He hurried to get to the bar. We're just kind of sitting there like we're 16 and 17 years old. Like, all right, well, if Bobby Orr did that, then I guess we're not going to be riding this bike tonight. Yeah, he was great. He called the treadmill the walkathon. He said, get off that walkathon.
And he can be an intimidating guy, but all the stories that you hear from people are how much he was just such a personable, loving, supportive coach.
Extremely, yeah. I mean, he was hard on guys to a degree. Yeah. When he walked through the locker room, everyone stopped talking. I think that was the ultimate show of respect that that killer was there. And, you know, the funny thing with him, we'd have the same drills. My 4 years, we did probably six drills my entire junior career, but never watched a single second of video either with Killer. But he let guys play, and he allowed you to be yourself. You know, the smart players, the guys that knew the game and saw the game well, had so much success under Killer. You look at the guys that one played pro, that played for the 67s under Brian Kilgray. They were always, and even in their pro career, they were known as smart, intelligent players. And a lot of that has to do with Killer.
What were the six drills?
A lot of regroups, a 2-on-1, and then a skating drill always at the end.
Time it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't on long, but we worked hard. Those drills, some of those drills we'd do for 20 minutes. Guys would be looking at each other like, all right, when are we going to end this? And back then, Bert was our assistant coach, and Bert wouldn't go on the ice. I don't even know if he had skates, so Bert would be standing on the bench, and guys would be asking, like, Bert, get this drill over with. So, yeah, it's special times.
That's the great Bert O'Brien, I think you're talking about. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, tell you what, the one thing you should be proud of, A, is your career, the more than 300 goals, more than 700 points. But I think you played in the loudest building in the National Hockey League for a long time.
Absolutely.
And you guys made it loud.
We did. I mean, talking to players that played here over our run where we were very, really good, they would say, their coaches would say, get through the first 10 minutes, knock down two goals. Try to survive. And like I said, credit to our fans and credit to our team, because we jumped on them right away. And a lot of those games were up 2-3-0 pretty quick.
John's background is television production from the roots. And I think you could go there, man. You got a delivery and you've got an eye for it.
Tell Murs he's in trouble now.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We'll see.
Thanks, Logan. I really appreciate it. And congratulations on a great career.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Your eyes lit up when Logan talked about the doubt that hockey players feel during the course of a series.
Well, because we all oftentimes make up these storylines in the media and think, well, the players live in that bubble and they don't care about that stuff, and they're super elite, and they're able to control their emotions in these situations, and so it's only the fan base that really feels that challenge. But for Logan to explain it the way he did to me was utterly fascinating. That, you know, there are some guys on that Maple Leaf squad that might be having some doubt, and it might, you know, cause them to react to a situation on the ice maybe a second later than they should. And that second later will cause something to happen on the ice. I mean, it's the classic case in my mind, the way he explained it, is that the game of hockey, if you think on the ice, it's too late, right? You have to almost react instinctively. And you know, that self-doubt is obviously bigger than some of us think it might be for the Maple Leafs, and for anything. Los Angeles must be going through that self-doubt as well. And in Winnipeg, right?
So it's the journey and the route that Toronto's taken to this stage that's caused this situation. If it was win one, lose one, and you end up 3-2, it's just a good series.
Yes.
But it's just, people will say, typical Toronto drama, that the Leafs back their way into a situation that is uncomfortable. Vintage Toronto.
Well, it's a classic case of what have you done for me lately?
Yeah. Well, and the record in elimination games.
What over is it, the last, was it 1-12, 1-13 now, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredibly unfortunate and not taking advantage of the opportunity before them.
Yeah, but who's feeling the pressure more? Is it the coach who, I mean, I think Craig's done a pretty good job all season.
No, is it Austin Matthews? This is all on the players. All so
Marner,
the players.
Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Tavares.
Yeah.
More so than any other group.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed. I don't think Max Pacioretty has played well. I would be shocked if he's in the lineup for game six. And I think they're going to have to put young Nick Robertson in. God, I sound like an old man when I say that.
You do?
Young Nick Robertson. But yeah. They're going to have to put Nick Robertson back in because they might need some goal scoring.
And I don't know how, I've said this several times over the last few years, I don't know how you move on, but even if they go to a seventh game, I'm not sure that they're bleeding enough going into the next round that they can recover. They got to end it in six.
Like, good luck.
It's there. And Ottawa's played well outside of the first game. Ottawa's played well.
Yeah, they have. They have. And Linus Ullmark is finally playing the way that people expected him to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, by the way, Anthony Stolarz, I think, has been brilliant. Even in the 4-0 loss, I thought he was very good. I wouldn't, and any discussion about Joseph Woll is ludicrous. Ludicrous.
So, but
what do you do in Winnipeg, though? I want to ask you, you're a Brandon guy. What do you think?
You're not putting in Eric Comrie.
What?
You're not putting in Eric Comrie.
No, you're not putting in Eric Comrie.
But Edmonton did it. Like Edmonton did it 2 years in a row, and they've had success doing it with, I would argue, the most unlikely of goaltenders to be inserted in that situation.
Yeah.
And somehow they found a way to do it.
It's a fantastic story, really, from personal, individual triumph and
one of the most likable guys on that team, like from teammate to teammate.
By the way, you know what happens with him is he probably runs every player pool too. Like, he's probably got a derby pool going for the weekend. Yeah. You know, so. But you have an answer, right? What do you do in Winnipeg? Overall, forget about, I mean, Connor Hellebuck's going to play. What do you think?
Coming back, so that's good. I think this is positive for them in the sense of they get to face their demon and find a way through it. It's right in front of them to step up. And I think they're a deeper team that they've showed. I love their top line, which has been fantastic. Their blue line's been okay, but it's the demon in front of them for Scheifele, for Connor, for Hellebuck. It's time, man. And Hellebuck, maybe one thing I will say is I think he gets too caught up in being confident that accepting a little bit of weakness or vulnerability might not be a bad thing at times. I'm not trying to play shrink here, but that's the way I look at it. That he spends so much energy telling the world that putting it out there that everything's fine. Well, it's not fine. Find a way to be fine.
I don't think he said that. I think he did eat a little bit of his. I think he did eat a little bit of humble pie. And I think he did admit that he needs to be better. But this, you know, I, by the way, as you know, I fully expected them to be back from St. Louis tied at two. I did. I just didn't think they would get outscored and outplayed as badly as they did in the two games in St. Louis. So, This team can right the ship, but there's two guys I think really are a factor in this. First one that's playing and one that's not. The one that's not is Nick Ehlers. They really miss Nick Ehlers because obviously now that second line can't go without him. They haven't been able to find that magic elixir of a winger to play with Namestnikov and Perfetti. The other one is Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey had a great season. And that's why he was on the Four Nations team. Josh Morrissey, we have to really notice Josh Morrissey in game six or game five. Sorry. We have to really notice Josh Morrissey in game five. Because you would know, you know, we're trying to put Morrissey in that same ilk as Makar and Werenski and Hughes, all the Norris Trophy guys. Every game that those teams played, and big games, you noticed what those guys did. And I fully expect that Josh Morrissey has to play a bigger part. And people are going to say, well, he's played great. Well, you know what? He hasn't played great enough. And he has to. He just has to.
But Hellebuck owns this. That first and foremost.
Totally. Totally. But this is there is enough blame to go around in Winnipeg for those two losses.
People in Winnipeg were nervous when they were up 2-0.
Yeah, I know. Well, that you were for sure. I wasn't.
But no, my buddies sent me the notes. They're like, I don't know. The games are too close. But Hellebuck, it's now. Or I'm not sure. He's there. It's contract. He's a great goalie. He's going to be a Hall of Famer because of the three Vezinas. It's all there. But the stigma of this, man, it's tough to get past.
By the way, before we finish, I want to talk about Bruce Cassidy. When Hartman scored the goal, I was watching the ESPN feed. I didn't.
Why weren't you watching me?
I didn't get you. They only offered me one feed.
You said that before.
Yes,
I don't get you.
I don't get you most of the time. After the puck went in and Hartman's doing his skate down the ice, there's a great single shot of Cassidy and Dom Ducharme. And you can read Dom Ducharme's lips. It's offside. So now Bruce is there. And what Bruce does is he plays a great game of poker, an unbelievable game of poker. And he lets the events take place and takes his time. Let the league go through the first situation, which is non-team constituted, which is the kick-in. Take your time. Take your time. Oh, it's a good goal. Then play my ace card. It really was in many ways a really, really good act of how to pace a situation and how to get the best of emotion out of a situation with a coach, how to use a challenge. It was fascinating. I'd love to sit down with him and walk through that 3 or 4 minute window, because he's sitting there looking upset, looking disappointed. He knows full well he's going to challenge. He knows full well.
Well, here's the thing. Normally, video coaches will always check the entry. And Logan mentioned that. But the goal, the puck went in the net so fast after entering the zone. And then there was all the discussion about whether it was kicked in. Dave Rogowski, the video coach, had to work backwards. He looked at the kicking motion first as the NHL was going through there. No, that's a good goal. Then they went back to the entry and they used the time while the league was still looking at the kicking motion
right,
to really dig into it. And he was pretty confident. And Dave Rogowski was the same guy that said, don't challenge the play in game four, Kaprizov in the crease. So he's got ice water in his veins. I don't know how he does it.
We've seen in this playoff already, I think, in the LA series and in the Vegas series, is the tactics of using video review of the how
you need a timeout, or
how the how to's and the how not to's. And to me, it's one of those little sideline stories of what coaches have to deal with now. It was fascinating to watch Bruce and his straight face through that whole time.
Well, Bruce has said before to me and the other people on our broadcast team, he's got the last say. It goes to him. Now, he'll consult with Dom or John Stevens or Sean Burke. We'll get into the goalie interference stuff through the headset, through the video coach, Dave Rogowski. But he's got the final say. I wonder, the LA challenge that went so wrong, was was that coming from the video room or was that Hiller making that call? That's the part that, because I've struggled with looking at that piece of video and the play LA Edmonton and saying, we got to challenge that.
Well, I'm Harry Truman, baby. Harry Truman. You know what that means?
No, because
what?
I'm a little more modern.
My pal Bettman would know what it means because he reads those kind of books, right?
What does it mean?
The buck stops here.
Oh, I have heard that phrase.
That's Harry Truman.
Yeah.
And that's what Jim Hiller has to suck up and live with. The buck stops here.
Final thought on this. And I've never seen this happen before. Anything like this.
I can't believe you didn't know Harry Truman. It's okay.
Well, I didn't know the buck stops here thing. So that goal in Vegas happens with a minute and change left.
1:15.
They Aiden Hill says it looked like kicking motion. He's motioning. They go to look at it, the referees. They announce in the rink it's a good goal. So the fact that they're looking at it, there's a little bit of hope in the rink. They point to center ice, it's a good goal. The place goes, whew.
Yeah.
Like you're about to face elimination. And then they announce Vegas is challenging for offside. Boom, energy, because offside's like pretty black and white. You're confident. Yeah.
No S at the end, okay? Offside.
No, offside.
Yeah.
I'm the same way with you on the offsides.
No, offside. And
offside. Yeah. I'm saying offside.
Okay.
And maybe I'm just slurring. But then when they said it was coming back, and you're just looking at this referee, and I'm up in section 117, the place went bananas. It was like you got to watch a standing ovation organically happen. I've never experienced that before, because normally you're always watching the play when the crowd goes wild.
Well, it's similar in the Hiller Evander Kane challenge goal. Oiler fans got to celebrate three times.
Yeah.
Same goal.
And the players on the bench, the Vegas bench, I don't know how word travels that fast, but they all knew.
Yeah.
Well, no, during the course of the kick-in.
I'm telling
the
you, the coaches, Dom Ducharme told Bruce.
But ready, I don't know how it gets to the players, how they all.
They can hear. They have hearing, yeah. You know, so.
You're offsides.
Don't you go there.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves. I can't believe you would accuse me of saying offsides.
You check the tape. You said it twice.
There's no tape. Really? I said it?
Yep.
Hugh, run it back.
No, yeah.
I'm challenging.
I don't mind calling somebody out. Ryan Callahan, who's turned into a pretty good broadcaster, says offsides. And he said offsides 7 times last night.
I'm with you.
And if I had his cell number, I would be texting him.
I'm challenging your accusation that I said offsides.
Check the tape. I gotta go now. I gotta go now.
All right. Have fun.
By the way, who's Logan. Remember Sebastian Aho, his name's on the wall. Our first 100% hockey hero.
Okay, so you trump me with Seth Jarvis.
Yes.
Okay.
You can trump me the next time.
Trying not to use that word. We'll talk to you later on 100% Hockey with Ballard and Shannon.
What do you think I am, a carny?